Hello, everybody. Welcome back to this week's episode of The War Room, the interview series brought to you as part of the Clone Staff podcast. I am your host, Mike Overton, and joining me in the co-host seat this week is the wonderful Joseph Hurley. How are you, sir?
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
No worries at all. Now, our guest this week, we are super jealous of because they get to be aboard the bridge of the Enterprise and has also worked on some really incredible shows, such as Hello Again, Murdoch Mysteries, Accused, SkyMed, and Good Sam. Our guest this week is the wonderful Rong Fu. Rong, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. So, pardon me, let's start at the very beginning. What got you into acting?
Oh, that's very much at the beginning. I got into acting in middle school when I joined the drama club that one of our teachers, voluntarily created and ran. And that was sort of my first taste into drama, and I absolutely loved it. And actually, a couple of years ago, when I was working on SkyMed out in Winnipeg, I met my teacher on set, and we were acting together in a scene. And that was like such a wonderful full circle moment
That's
for
awesome.
me, because it's been 19 years, and I was like, "You're the reason I became an actor. Like, I wouldn't have, I don't know." I mean, maybe one way or another, I would have found my way back into acting, but to have found it then, that was 100% a credit to him as an incredible teacher. His name is Dan Brown. He's a wonderful actor as well. And we got to talking, and he kind of shared stories with me about how he used to, run out to auditions during lunch breaks and take days off if he ever booked a job. And I just admired him so much for being an educator and an actor at the same time. It's incredibly hard to do, and
So
it
that's
was
got to be
really,
tough.
it is tough. And I was like, wow. So, and he was like, in the summers when school is out, that's usually when a lot of things are filming. So he was like, I would, audition and work as an actor during the summers. And, apparently our principal was very supportive of his career as well. So he had quite a bit of leeway to kind of also be an actor, and he's still a teacher. So it took me a while to figure out who he was on set because he was using a reverse stage name, I want to say, on the call sheet. On the call
Oh.
sheet, he put his name like a fake name, something Montgomery, and I was like, I have no idea who this person is. But as we were sitting in the green room together, and I was listening to his voice, and when he it was during the pandemic, so when he took off his mask, so I was studying his face, and I was like, I think that's my middle school drama teacher.
And Ron, what was some of the advice that he gave you that's kind of still stuck with you to this day?
I mean, I was so young. I think he, the biggest thing I gained from him and from the drama club that he ran was really just to have fun and to not be afraid to try new things and be silly and really just have and carry a sense of play.
And like in your family, were your kind of parents or your siblings creative in any way, or was it just you totally striking out on your own when you decided to join the drama club?
It's a little bit of striking out on my own. Everyone on my dad's side of the family are very they're very good at maths and sciences. And on my mom's side of the family, we're a bit more working class, but I think I'm the only artist in the family. Although there are artistic traits, like my father is a very good was a very good visual artist. And I remember looking at some of his drawings when I visit my grandparents, and I'd just be absolutely totally taken by it. He was really good at drawing. He drew not only really great still lifes, but really great kind of like monsters. And I used to pester him all the time and being like, draw me another monster, like draw me a goblin. And that's also kind of where I also inherited like a joy for the visual arts. And I would say I was visually like I would say the visual arts was the first my first foray into being creative as a kid. I love to draw, love to paint, and then music, and then found my way into drama.
And all those years ago then, when you were in those plays in middle school and things like that, what were some of your early recollections of, say, really enjoying it? Were there any performances you say, oh, wow, I still remember doing that, even if it was the most kind of basic of plays and things like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first year in drama club, we performed monologues at our kind of holiday concert or showcase. And I remember I practiced a short monologue about a girl watching hockey with her family. And I don't know what play it's from. I don't know where it came from. But I remember performing the monologue and really having fun with it. And the next day, my French teacher came up to me. She's like, "Wrong, I had no idea you could do that. That was really incredible." And I was so surprised by her compliment because I think I was a very middle of the road student in her class, and for her to kind of give me that kind of moment of recognition, I think it was a big aha moment for me as a young actor. I was like, "Oh, I left an impression on someone, and we're now able to connect on a deeper level or kind of see each other more." And I thought that was really cool. And then I just kind of kept at it.
That's awesome. So what actors have inspired you? So whether that was when you were in, drama school, drama club, were there any actors back then that really kind of resonated with you?
I think early
Other than your drama
on,
teacher.
other than my drama teacher, I would say like around that time when I was in middle school, I loved and still love Lucy Liu. I think she was, I mean, she was a big, I mean, in terms of representation as well, she was a big Asian American movie star, and she was, incredibly beautiful and powerful and charismatic. And I think her performance in Kill Bill is probably one of my favorite performances on screen of all time.
I'm going to just jump in there for a second and say I'm probably one of those only people who has never seen either of the Kill Bill movies. And
What?
look at the expression on both your faces there. I'm kind of there going, thank God I'm looking at the camera, not at your faces right now, because I'm there going, I suspect that I would cause outrage by that statement. Yeah, I've never actually watched either of them, and I don't know why.
What?
Okay, I'm
I mean,
buying you
they've been
copies and
out
sending them to you now.
for
We'll just pause this interview while I go off and watch both movies now, and we'll come back
because that's
to
like 4.5 hours.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll resume. I want your take on the
Look, if it's a Channing Tatum film, I've probably seen it 5 times,
movie.
right? But if
Of
it's anything, yeah,
course.
we're not going to disparage against Channing Tatum on this
Okay.
podcast, Mike. Was there anyone else outside of Lucy Liu as well, Ron, that you really were kind of connected to?
Of course, I think once I got into high school, I went to an arts high school, and during that time, I started doing theater at various theater companies in Toronto. There was a lot of programs for young emerging artists, for high school students, a lot of these outreach programs, and I applied to pretty much everyone that I qualified for. And during that time, I met theater artists in Toronto who, volunteer their time as mentors for, young actors and young creatives. And I would say those artists really solidified in me the belief that I could make a career out of this because they were people that were my mentors, and they were people who showed me what was possible in terms of working in the arts. And, I always kind of credit the Toronto theater community as having partially raised me as a person because they did.
And like, what age were you when you kind of, as you said, like believing that you could actually make a full go of it and this could be your kind of your full-time job? Like as you kind of went by, was it kind of them kind of inspiring you, or did you kind of at some point before that say, do you know what, I actually think I can do this. I could actually make a living kind of being an actor.
I think that would have probably been around in grade 11, I want to say, like when I was about 16. I can't really remember the specific moment of when I thought that I could do it, but I do remember, I guess it was a culmination of the year of working on plays and writing a lot. Actually, that's probably it. I think when I started writing for theater, that's when I kind of realized like I have a creative voice that I could use that people seem to be interested in. And it gave me a lot of confidence to believe that I can make a career out of it.
And with the writing you do, Ron, what is the kind of thing that you enjoy writing kind of about most? Is it kind of your, like, do you put your own experiences into your story, or do you try to tell original stories? And kind of what do you try and aim for with it? Obviously, look, every story is going to be different and all that, but what do you enjoy writing kind of about most?
I think, I mean, I don't write as much as I used to back then, but I think something that I really enjoy are I love playing with magic realism. I love a hint of absurdity, dark humor. I will say I do not like writing from my personal experience, and I've tried it. I gave it a go. I wrote a really bad play when I was a teenager. Called 1-800 I Got Issues. It was horrible. But that was the advice I was given as a young writer. Like, write what you know, write what you know. It's like, okay, fine, I'll write a play about, four high school girls and they're all different aspects of me and their friends. And it was dreadful and I hated that play. But I did it, and from that I learned that I do not like writing from my own experience.
I think we have to name this episode of the podcast 1-800 I Got Issues.
Yeah,
So Mike, would
please
you put that down there, please, if you wouldn't mind. And do you still have a copy of that play, Ron? Not that I'm going to ask to see it. I'm just curious, do you still have
Yeah, I'm sure it's in my hard drive somewhere.
it? Corrupted 1800 times. No.
Yeah.
Oh dear. So obviously you went to college. What did you study at college?
I studied acting, just more of the
Okay, so at this point you are pretty adamant that that is exactly what you wanted to do and nothing else is going to sway you.
Pretty much. I think by grade 12, I dropped out of all of my science and math courses, and I was like, I'm just gonna pursue theater, and that's what we're gonna do, and that's what I did. I went to York University in Toronto, and I went into their theater program and did the acting conservatory there. And since then, got an agent and have just been working in this industry since.
So there was no plan B then, Ron, in this kind of situation. You were just there going, I'm just going to go for it. And like, if it fails, well, that's kind of, but I clearly mean, clearly looks like you were determined that you weren't going to fail and you were going to make this a success.
Yeah, and I think the idea of success is kind of always a bit of a moving target. I think I didn't have a plan B, and that was purposeful because I didn't want to have anything to fall back on. And the reason, and I think I got my resolve in sort of, growing up with my parents and observing them, and there was a sense that I had that. I feel like my parents had sacrificed a lot to for them to, we immigrated here when I was a child, that they never were able to kind of pursue their dreams or didn't have the luxury to. And I feel like on one hand, we hear like there's the, I'll be a good daughter, I'll get a stable job and do the responsible thing as a way of honoring one's parents. But I felt like that would be a disservice, not only to them and the sacrifice that they made, but also to myself, that like if I were to also give up on my dreams that early, that it would be, I think, a dishonor to the sacrifice that they've made. And so
I'm just curious then, like, I'm just I like in these situations, you'd compare it to say what you'd have yourself growing up, but I just know what like Irish parents would 100% say to you, are you sure now you wouldn't just get a job with the local council or something like that? So were your parents ever kind of saying to you, are you sure you wanted to go down this road? Is there anything else you want to do? Or are they just very supportive and just saying, no, we fully back you on what you're trying to do here?
Oh, of course. I mean, I think any sensible parent, when they hear that their kid wants to go into the arts, are going to have some questions. You know, if I had a kid and they're like, I want to be an actor, I'm being like, are you sure? No, definitely. I think my mom for a long time wished that I would become a dentist. Really,
What?
just so that she'll have free dental care, I think. And then, or she wanted for me to work in government. You know, these are all very stable jobs. And then my dad,
Yes.
curiously enough, he's always been a little bit more quiet about. I think he and I do appreciate that a lot about him. I think he gave me a lot of space to kind of pursue what I want to do. And he wasn't, he didn't, he never really kind of imposed any sort of ideas of what I should be doing. He's always been quite supportive.
So if Rong Fu was not an actor, what would Rong Fu be doing right now, do you think?
Oh my gosh, this past year with the strike and everything, that's a question I ask myself every single day. I think for me, I love to cook, and so if the wrong food today, I think I might find a job in the culinary world.
So in a parallel universe, there is a Rong Fu for president 2024 somewhere.
For 2024, who and in another world, Rong Fu, who's a Michelin star chef.
So hang on a second now, Rangfu. We can't let you away with this. If you enjoy cooking, what's your most favorite thing to make?
Oh gosh,
And just remember as well, we're going to ask you for the recipe first because we're going to 100% put this out there as well when we put the episode out so people can make whatever you say is your favorite thing to make.
Oh my gosh, if you're gonna ask me to put out a recipe, I really love making braises, and I think one of my favorite things to make is like a braised pork belly. It's one of my favorite dishes growing up eating, and it still is one of the foods that I crave all the time. There's a, I kid you not, there's a pork belly in my freezer right now that's waiting to be braised.
I do love a good bit of pork belly.
And as you've been kind of spent your time kind of getting more into the acting world and things like that, right, Ron, what do you think are some of the lessons you've kind of picked up along the way, both good and bad, and from all the, say, different productions, TV shows, and all that kind of thing that you've worked on? What are some of the lessons you've learned along the way?
Oh gosh, like so many lessons. I think the biggest lesson that I've learned is that I think the most valuable lesson that I continue to hold is that, you know, at the end of the day, people want to work with people that that are fun to work with, you know. So there's really no room to there's really no like I guess having like having a, I don't know, like an ego or being a jerk really doesn't serve you in this industry, because at the end of the day, it's a collaborative art, and you have to be an open, generous, collaborative person. And I think the best advice I can give to anyone from, you know, what I've observed and learned over the years is just, you know, don't be an asshole. Like it's pretty simple. It's there's no one wants to work with an asshole. So just be a nice person. It's very basic.
It's funny though, isn't it, that some people can't even get
Yeah,
the
just be a nice person. I don't know what.
Oh dear. Anyway, so let's go to the sort of the beginning of your career. What were some of your first acting roles?
One of my first acting roles was I got cast in a production called The Crucible by Arthur Miller, one of, you know, classic American plays at Soulpepper, which is a theater company in Toronto that I absolutely love. And I felt so lucky to have my first credit there, like straight out of school. I thought I won the lottery. I was like, this is amazing. And it was a really fun production because that was my first time working on a professional show with artists. And I think that's really where I learned that how important it is to be how important it is to work from a place of openness and generosity, and how far that and how much of that makes a difference. It was a really fun show. I mean, I play little Betty Paris, one of the girls that, you know, go crazy with witchcraft, supposedly. And I still remember the show. The show opens with little Betty in bed, on stage. And what I didn't know was that I would be on stage when the house opens 30 minutes before the show.
Oh.
And it's a slightly raked stage. So I would be lying kind of like with my feet above me, head down.
Oh God, head rush.
For like half an hour. And the thing that I kept telling myself is like, just don't fall asleep, don't fall asleep, don't fall asleep. And sure enough, there was a few times where I actually woke up when the show started. Yeah, it was like I didn't know, realize it took so much like mental fortitude just to stay awake and do it to act asleep.
And what was the first credit you got then on TV then?
What was the first credit that I got on TV? I think that would have been a show called Warehouse 13.
Karen Miller.
Yeah, and...
In episode Second Chance, if I remember rightly, which is actually one of my favorite episodes. Gosh, I love
really?
Warehouse 13. Yeah, I have the
wrong. Wrong. How do we know more about your career than you do in this situation?
Well, you're clearly much better researchers than my memory guy. Yeah, Karen Miller, right. Yeah, I remember that show because I played a patient and she was like infected with. A rust disease. There was some sort of rust creature infecting people, and
People literally rusted away. It's brilliant. I loved it.
Literally rusted away. Yeah, I remember going to set, and it completely dispelled any idea I had about working on a TV show because I kind of imagined like, oh, I'm going to get my makeup done and my hair done, and it's going to be so glamorous. And they're like, we're not going to do anything to your hair because you're sick, and we're not going to put any makeup on you because you're sick. But we are going to glue these pieces of rust, like these prosthetic rust pieces, all over your face. And I was like, and I remember feeling like, oh, this is not glamorous at all.
I made a terrible mistake.
And then, of course, it being one of the first shows of one of my friends downloaded the episode, and to this day he still makes fun of me because I think my character was a boxer, and there's a line where she's like, yeah, I do boxing or something like that, and he would all often pull it up and just make fun of me, being like, you do not look like you box. I was like, yeah, I don't.
So which one do you prefer then? Do you prefer working in TV or do you prefer working in the theater?
I love both. And if I can continue to have a career where I swing back and forth, I'd be very happy. I think film and TV is a lot of fun. You work a lot faster. You are forced to kind of make choices very quickly on the day and come prepared. Whereas theater, you have more time to kind of explore and go deeper, and you get to revisit the performance night after night. They're both great. Like I love them both. And you know, be very happy if I can, you know, die on stage one day.
So what is some of your non-Star Trek work that you're most proud of?
Most of my non-Star Trek work that I am most proud of? It's a very good question.
We told you to start wrong. We were going to ask you all the hard questions. You were warned in advance that it wasn't going to be an easy interview.
Yeah, I think it's a hard question for me because I guess I have my toxic trait is that I'm never proud, really, or I don't allow myself to feel very proud of the work that I've done.
Actually, do you find it hard watching yourself back on TV if you're okay, yes, that's a yes, and you're straight.
Very hard. It's painful, actually. I have to do it because it's to some degree part of my job, but I really don't enjoy watching myself. I love to act. I love to perform, but I really hate watching my work back.
So what you're saying is you will never watch this interview back ever again after we release it.
Yeah, I probably will not, if I'm going to be perfectly honest. But to get back to your question, a project I recently worked on that I really enjoy that's not Star Trek is a show called Space Janitors. And it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a show about the janitors on the Death Star.
I've heard about this.
And it's coming out. They've made the show like 10 years ago. Just a bunch of comedians, and they had quite a big online following, and then it's been 10 years and they decided, you know what, let's just make it again. And I was asked to join and be one of the janitors. And it was probably one of the silliest, most insane shoot I've ever been a part of, and probably one of the most fun I've ever had, especially doing a show that's just like a full-on comedy, and to have the opportunity to improv and play and just really step outside of character. It was a lot of fun. And it was an amazing crew, and the creative team were also just incredible. And, you know, again, just talking about people who are really awesome and kind and making work out of a place of love and generosity. It was that all around.
And that's coming out. Yeah, well, I was about to ask you, when is it out, Ron?
It's coming out on May 4th.
Oh,
I was just going to say, it has to be May 4th, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Jeepers, I have to look this up. I didn't hear about this at all, actually.
Yeah, it's...
I've just found it on Facebook.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Oh, my word, there it is now.
Oh, and Instagram. I will put the link to it in the description of this video.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a show that I really look forward... I actually do look forward to seeing it when it comes out, just because it was so much fun to make.
So you're going to be one of those other people in that exclusive club of working on both Star Trek and Star Wars now then, Ron, in that situation.
Yeah, yeah, I'll be at an unauthorized Star Wars parody. But
and Ron, like, were you a Star Trek fan growing up? Now, if you weren't, it's okay. We'll just end the interview immediately if you say you weren't, of course.
Okay. No, I guess I wasn't a Star Trek fan growing up, just because I mean, I always like to blame being an immigrant as a result of a lot of pulp culture that I missed out on growing up. But I remember when the films came out in 2004, like the new films with Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto came out.
2009, I think, yeah. Was the first
2009?
One.
2009? Okay, yeah. When those came out, I went to see it with a friend, and both of us were, you know, we shared a lot of similar fandoms that we enjoyed, and both of us were new to Star Trek, and what we watched that film together, and we were like, this is really cool. And we tried to back then start a Star Trek blog called Watching Star Trek, kind of like what you guys did. We tried to watch every episode and kind of blog about it instead of, you know, podcasting. And we tried that for a while, but unfortunately we never finished.
Hang on a second. I have to find out more about this now. Does that blog still exist out in the universe somewhere?
I have no idea.
Oh my God.
We have no idea. I think it was called Watching Star Trek, and it was like a WordPress blog. And I think we tried to do like every other episode, like kind of take turns. But then eventually I think I just started binging the show, and then I got too far ahead to go back to blog about the episode I was supposed to blog about. And then eventually both of us just kind of dropped the ball.
So hang on a second, just in terms of you probably won't remember the episode names. Do you remember any of the good episodes you watched, or some of the episodes where you were going, oof, God, no, that didn't connect to me at all?
Oh boy. That was so long ago.
I know it's 15 years now, would you believe, that since Star Trek 09 came out. I know I have an awful habit of, in episodes, of actually aging all of us remarkably. Me, Mike, and our guest, I always say something that indicates the passage of time and how old we've all become in the meantime.
Yeah. I mean, I remember there was there's snippets and moments that I remember. You know, I think the scene of Sulu fencing.
Yes.
Was really, really shook me to my core. I was like, oh my God, I didn't know he does this in the show.
And in fairness, he looks glorious in that image as well.
With the rapier, yeah. As well, yeah. I feel like I remember taking a screenshot of that and putting it on the blog.
I'm sure George Takei would very much thank you for doing that in that kind of situation. And how did, say, acting in Star Trek come about then?
I came about in with an audition, really. It was, I got the audition in, I want to say, oh my gosh, when did we start filming? 2021? Early 2021?
Yes.
You kind of looked at us in a panicked way, Rung, as if to say, like, listen, have me out here.
I do. I want to say we started filming early 2021. So I had an audition that came in, and I was very excited because I remember when Discovery started filming in Toronto, I texted my agent in a frenzy of like, please, like, I'll do anything. I'll be a background actor. I just want to be on Star Trek. And of course, I unfortunately never got on to Discovery. But when Strange New Worlds came along, I had an audition. And I think around the same time, I was also auditioning for a role on Discovery at the same time. Ooh. And I was kind of like, okay, I got like a chance to be in both. And like, I just got to get at least one of them, please.
What role did you audition for Strange New Worlds?
Discovery, you mean?
No, for Strange New Worlds. Did you audition for the role that you got? Because I know a lot of times people audition and they go, well, you're not right for that role, but we want you for this role instead. So did you audition for the role of Jenna Mitchell?
I did.
You did, yeah. And you got it. Awesome.
And I got it. And I was very surprised, and I was very happy, and I was like, oh my god, I get to be on the bridge,
which we are incredibly jealous of.
Yeah.
So in terms of the audition then, Rung, like, did they kind of, do you have to, again, this is totally me just being a bit of a nerd and just wanting to know, like, do you have to, like, are you acting out a scene? Did it give you kind of dialogue with a lot of techno babble in it, like all the, you know, the technical terms, or what exactly does the, say, the audition consist of?
It was a mix of both. I think they wrote a scene for the audition that included some techno babble and a little bit of characters. A scene with Mitchell and Pike, although if I remember correctly, I think they gave him a false name in the scene. And I was like, I think that's the captain. It was just like a scene with Mitchell and Pike about, I think if I remember correctly, something about sensors. I don't know, but there was quite a bit of technical jargon, and you know, usually I'm pretty, you know, I do pride myself, I think I memorize lines very quickly, but something about the audition, about the stakes of it being on Star Trek and how much I wanted to be on the show, I hate to admit, but I did cheat a little bit. I cut out the techno babble part and I taped it next to my camera. It was a Zoom audition, and I just had it there, a safety net of like, just in case I trip over my words, it's there if I need to, you know. And I thought I totally bombed the audition as a result. I felt like I was not prepared enough, and luckily they chose me.
Did you have to sing? Hmm? Did you have to sing in your audition?
Thank God, no.
Are you saying you don't have a good singing voice?
I really don't. I remember when we were told about the musical episode in season two, during the first episode read, and I think Akiva was like, so if you have any like musical talents, like, let us know. And I desperately wanted to be in the musical episode, but I have no musical talents. And so I kind of was just quietly hoping that I get put in the episode and just be like a chorus member. And that's what I got. And I was very happy.
And in terms of, say, like, what's it like being on the bridge in terms of, say, when you're filming versus what we see on TV? Like, are the panels kind of all really cool? Are they kind of, you know, lighting up and all? Do you really kind of feel like, wow, I feel immersive. I actually feel like I'm on the bridge of a starship in this situation.
Yeah, you do. It's, I mean, it's credit to like the production design team and the special effects team. They do such a great job of like our panels actually do change with the information to the scene, sometimes they're cued to our lines, you know, if a ship is entering or some kind of images, or our panels, like, it almost feels as if they are like, if they actually like work for real, because that's just, you're very, very much immersed in it. And then, you know, when we're filming scenes where the ship is being attacked, there are like live elements that, you know, sparks and fires and debris that come like hurling towards us. And, you know, they do such a good job in the lighting department as well, you know, making sure that we really feel like we're being attacked or encountering a new star.
Timothy Peel, who is the UI designer for all of the interfaces, does an incredible job.
Yeah, I think in season one, one of the days the computers were working so much on just kind of keeping up with all of those graphics that we actually lost power for like 4 hours. Because they're like, we're not used to this much computing. I don't know.
Yeah, because I think with Strange New World, it's all screens. Whereas when you compare it with other product like Picard, where they use a lot of projectors, they don't do that. So everything that moves on the back is a computer monitor, and there's 50 of them on a set. It's mad.
Yeah,
it's really mad.
In terms of the uniforms, Enrang, I'm always curious. Like going back to the days of the Next Generation, when the Cassies complain about kind of how ill fitting or this and that the uniforms were. What are the uniforms like on Stranger Worlds? Are they actually nice? Are they comfortable? Or are they, God, this is just not an enjoyable thing to wear?
You know, they're quite comfortable, I would say, the costumes themselves. And Bernadette Peters is an amazing costume designer. She really, she has such an eye for detail in terms of how she wants everything to fit. And between seasons, she's always kind of like modifying a little bit here and there. I would say the most uncomfortable part of the costume is that we are given full body Spanx to wear underneath the costumes, because I guess they want to kind of have the costumes look like very smooth on our bodies, which I've gone rogue and have decided not to wear my Spanx. And for a good reason. There's been conversations about it. I have been policed. I have been caught. But I have a very good reason for not wearing my Spanx. And that's because I'm often at the helm, where you only see like as much as you're seeing of me now. Yeah. So there really is no reason for me to be wearing Spanx. And once you're wired in with the mics and everything, it's really challenging to go to the bathroom in them, because you can't take them off without taking off your whole costume, which requires getting dewired. Like it's very uncomfortable. So I try to get away with it whenever I can.
So let me just check. Sorry, Mike. I'm just writing up the list of complaints that we have to send to Paramount. So the audition was cheated through the audition. Won't wear the Spanx on set. Like it's just I'm not too sure if we'll see Jenna Mitchell on the Bridge of Enterprise in season 3.
No. Because of this.
I was watching an interview with Tawny Newsome and
Jack Wade.
No, it was with Jonathan Frakes and Tawny Newsome the other day. And something I didn't even realize is that there are lapel mics in your deltas, which I didn't realize. Ah. I thought I've just presumed it was all boomed and everything else, but I didn't realize that you're all wired up with microphones in your deltas.
Yeah, that was actually a modification they made in season 2.
Right.
Because I think before they tried to kind of, they were taped to the insides of our costumes, like by our collar. And then by season 2, they kind of had it built in. So there's like a little hole in our costume that pokes out that you can hide the mic right behind the delta. And it was very clever.
So where does the mic pack sit then? Because obviously with most microphones, there's a pack, but you never see them. Are they just carefully hidden away or are they taken out in post?
Depending on the style of costume you wear, like for mine, they're kind of clipped behind my back.
Right.
Just a lower back, but I think depending on how the scene is being shot, sometimes they can be clipped on your ankle as well.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, so it would just be like a long line that runs down the side of your body.
Gotcha.
But for the most part, kind of just behind our backs.
See, I didn't even know that you were individually mic'd. I just presumed it would be some boom poor person with a boom arm.
Yeah, and there is also a person with a boom.
And Ron, what's the atmosphere like on the set? Like who's kind of the biggest, for want of a better term, kind of prankster messer on the kind of set? Who kind of keeps everyone kind of enthusiastic, kind of, and basically who keeps the atmosphere good on the set?
Oh, wow. I credit that a lot to our first ADs. They're really great at running the show, keeping everybody like in high spirits, and also our directors. I think Chris Fisher is a really fantastic leader on the show on the days that he directs and also on the days when he doesn't direct. The show is just really made with a lot of people who are very passionate about the project. And, you know, that's, you know, this everyone on the crew and the entire cast as well. I think we all get along really well. And, you know, there's oftentimes, you know, like, and when we come back from lunch, someone's got a Bluetooth speaker playing blasting music just to try and, you know, get our energies back up.
So is, does everyone adhere to Wrong Foo's no assholes policy on the set?
Well, yeah, they have to. Otherwise, you know, it's a violation of their contracts.
I love that.
No, it's not necessary. Stone. Everybody's very nice. It's one of my favorite shows to work on because it's such a great atmosphere, and you know, it's a great deal of fun.
And of the episodes you've been on, which is the one that you kind of remember fondly the most?
Oh, the musical episode. That was the most fun. That was the most fun because it felt like we were doing theater and making Star Trek at the same time, and it was just an experience I never expected. I was like, I am rehearsing a musical theater play right now, but we're on the bridge. We have dance calls. It was so fun.
So I have to understand this because, again, like, this is totally my ignorance. When you're on the bridge and you're dancing and you're singing and things like that, are people actually singing on the spot in kind of real life, which would be kind of, you know, maybe recorded over an ADR and things like that? Or how does it work exactly?
Oh, I think it depends. I think some people, like, I think in the performance, we kind of, I wouldn't say we sing full out because they play the track over it. And it's the track that you hear, the pre-recorded tracks that you hear. But, you know, for us to feel like we're in time, there's a little bit of singing that happens.
Who were the best singers and dancers on the set on the day?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, Celia is a world-class performer and singer. She's fantastic. But I think, and also Chrissy has a phenomenal voice. I know she's recently released some music. Yeah. She's so incredibly talented. And I think one of my favorite days on set is Anson's song with Battelle. I think that was just the most fun because he was really giving it his all, and especially when he like falls to his knees, I just remember my jaw dropped to the floor. I was like, oh my god. Yeah.
Private Conversation, great track.
Private Conversation, yeah, so private fun.
It's one of my favorites. So would you say that is your highlight then?
I think so. I think in terms of unexpectedness and fun and just overall hilarity, it was just the most fun. Like, there's, you know, me and Melissa were constantly trying to figure out ways to, like, you know, like, what are Mitchell and Ortega's doing? And we choreographed, like, during the last number, like, the two of us and Dan as well. And Carol, like, we really worked on, like, we worked out our own choreography in the background because they were so focused on the line in front. And we were kind of like, but guys, look, we came up with something. we were just having so much fun doing it.
I'm so jealous of you, Ryan, because we've all seen the episode. The episode is brilliant. But to talk to someone who's actually on the set while all this is getting made and kind of can, you know, all the creativity that was kind of driven into it, like just the absolutely ridiculously kind of green-eyed monster about all the experiences you've kind of had on it. And do you hope to come back for season 3?
I am back in season 3. We're filming now.
Yes, it started just after Christmas, didn't it? Or just before Christmas?
We just started before Christmas, and that was a shocking call because when the strike ended, I was like, great, we'll go back in the new year. And they were like, are you available in December? And I was like, what? Like, in 2 weeks?
Yeah, because I saw, I think it was Akiva posted something on social, literally the day filming started. Obviously, you've already seen scripts and everything else, but pretend you haven't seen any scripts. Mm-hmm. What character development would you want to see for Jenna in season 3?
Oh, that's a good question. I feel like the writers are always going to be able to come up with something way better than anything I have in mind. I would love, you know, on the wild end, I would love a character, a day where Jenna, I don't know, does something really mischievous on the ship,
Whoopee cushion on Anson's chair. No,
exactly. There's just a day where Mitchell is just taken over by a prankster, and she decides to be a big prankster on the ship. I don't know. I would love to also, you know, and at the very least, I would just love to know a little bit more about her background and like where she's come from, and I like what her goals are. I don't know. I would love an episode where, like,
we need a Jenner episode.
Huh?
We need a Mitchell episode.
A Mitchell episode. That would be a dream come true. That would be a lot of fun. I truly have no idea what she would be doing. I feel like she would just be just flying the ship into a star. I don't know.
How many episodes of season three are filmed by this point, Ron?
At this point, I think they are moving into season episode, probably like episode two now.
Okay.
So two now, yeah.
Jeepers above. And what, outside of Star Trek, what else are you looking forward to doing outside of obviously Death Star janitors as well?
I think this year I'm going to revisit writing, and I'm going to be more focused on my own creative projects. And, you know, I have a great group of friends that are, we have a writer's group, and we're just keeping each other accountable. And I think that's the biggest challenge when it comes to writing, is just being accountable to your own personal deadline. So that's what I'll be mostly working on this year.
So it'd be, and would you like to write another stage play?
No, actually, I'm kind of more veering towards writing for television. Ooh. Although I am also workshopping a play idea. So kind of with acting as well, I hope to do both.
Oh, fantastic.
I just thought of an idea. You should write Mitchell's backstory.
Yeah.
As a, I'll just pitch it as an episode.
I'll just pitch it. Yeah, Mitchell's background.
So nearly going to wrap things up. Sho, do you have any last questions to ask before we look to close out the episode?
No, I just want to get hold of 1-800. Bloody hell, what was this called?
You don't need to remember it. You don't need to remember it.
1-800, I've got issues or problems or something.
That's it. I need to see this. It sounds absolutely glorious.
It was just full of teenage angst.
Ah, but that's the best awful kind of angst, though, Ron. Like, it makes no sense, teenage angst, and that's great.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, last question for you. Super easy, doesn't take any thought whatsoever. Rong Fu, what does Star Trek mean to you?
Star Trek means hope to me. I think the world of Star Trek paints kind of like a world where that we as humanity can hope towards in terms of advancements, in terms of where we can reach into the galaxy. And it's a very hopeful show, and gives, I think it's a show that gives humanity a lot of hope.
I love that.
Perfect.
Ron Fu, thank you so much for joining this week, and thank you everybody for listening and watching to this episode. Remember, you can check out our website, clonestarpod.com, for amazing fan art and blogs written by you, our fans. Until next time, live long and prosper.
Thanks, guys.